Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, we're heading towards European Parliament elections this June. So what are the issues at play in some of the other countries who are going to vote? Well, in a moment, we're going to hear from Germany and we're also going to hear from France. But first of all, let's start in Hungary, where Viktor Orban is in power there. And Hungary has been seen as a thorn in the side of the European Union. We're joined from there by Nick Thorpe, who's the BBC's Central Europe correspondent. Nick, thank you for joining us. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
So what are the big issues in Viktor Orban's Hungary?
Well, he obviously is looking very much forward to the June the 9th local and European elections. And the big thing for him there is he wants Hungary's nationalist, some he prefers to call it national conservative politics, very much the traditional family, keeping out of the war in Ukraine, stopping indeed any military supplies to Ukraine, and other sort of central issues to him. He'd like to get more traction for those across Europe and be less of the sort of black sheep of the European Union and more sort of taking over. He gave a speech the other day on Hungary's national holiday saying we must occupy Brussels. So he's very much aware of his isolation in the past, especially over Ukraine. But now he'd really like, he's hoping in those elections to get more allies in Europe, if you like.
So his ambition then is to change the EU from within rather than any sort of Brexit style strategy.
Exactly, yes. The European Union is very popular in Hungary. Opinion polls regularly give over 70, sometimes 80% support for the EU, and that's regardless of any political background. But what Mr. Orban's trying to do is create, or rather change, the EU from inside rather than leave it. He's in favour of what I suppose the French used to call a Europe of the nations, of sovereign nations, less Europe, more Europe as a place where sovereign nations get their business done.
Mm-hmm. And how strong is his position at home then in Hungary?
It's very strong indeed. He's won four elections in a row. So he's been in power now for 14 years since 2010. But interestingly, there are some new challenges to that. The opposition has been very weak and divided in the past. Mr. Orban's also changed the electoral system to make it easier for his own Fidesz party to keep the upper hand. Just recently, though, we've had the first major defection from not so much his party, but his court, in a way. A businessman quit the party and he's setting up a new party called Stand Up Hungarians. It's not even founded yet, but some polls are already giving it 16%. Obviously, that's far behind Mr. Orban's running. His party's running on 40-45%. But still, for a newcomer to come in like that, it shows a kind of thirst among some Hungarians, anyway, for an alternative to Mr. Orbán's rule.
Okay, so let's look specifically then at the European elections. How many seats does Hungary have?
Hungary has 13 now. The country has 21. In all, Fidesz, the governing party, has 13 at the moment. And so they're hoping to keep that 13, potentially increase it, whereas opposition parties rather divided, trying to hang on to the one or two seats they have in opposition to Mr. Orban's party.
But he might have a problem now, you're saying, with this split, with this businessman who's gone off to set up his own operation.
It is a problem, potentially, but he's left it very late. The businessman, Peter Madjar, has left it rather late ahead of the elections. It's too late, in fact, to register his own party. It's unclear at the moment if he's going to try and tag along with an existing one of the smaller parties and channel people's votes, if he can, towards that, or if he's going to leave these European elections now. It's 2 years till the next national election here, and focus his forces on creating this new party, this new pole on the Hungarian spectrum.
So what do you think is front of mind for voters there as we head towards June?
I think people are very worried by what's happening in Ukraine, and Mr. Orban's very cleverly tapped that. He's presented himself as the Prime Minister of Peace, and keeping out of the war in Ukraine. Obviously, though, if the Russians were to break through, Ukrainian lines, as they seem to be threatening to do. You know, there would be a danger if the Russians were to occupy the whole of Ukraine, that there would suddenly have a Hungary-Russia border there. So that's the main argument being used by those across Europe who say that the weapons supplies to Ukraine should be speeded up or maintained. So the war is a big shadow over Hungary with this border with Ukraine. But there are other issues. The grain issue, cheap Ukrainian imports, not so much flooding Hungarian markets with cheap grain, but taking Hungarian traditional export markets in Italy, for example, where Hungarian grain was traditionally sold. So that's quite another thing working for Mr. Orbán in these coming elections, really. Farmers here have been protesting as well, as in many countries in Europe, but here they're not protesting against the government. In a way, they're protesting with the government. Mr. Orbán's been very clear that the EU should not allow cheap imports from Ukraine.
Nick, thank you very much. Nick Thorpe there, BBC Central Europe correspondent based in Hungary. Let's go to Berlin now to Kate Brady, who's a reporter with the Washington Post Berlin Bureau. Kate, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. So we are a year and a half out to the next general election where you are. The European elections, though, will they be seen as a vote of confidence or otherwise in the current government?
Absolutely. This is really being seen as a temperature taking, really, of the current government. And of course, we've seen even in the past 9 to 12 months, a huge shift in the polls here. Of course, these are only polls for now, but we've seen how all three of the current governing parties are in third, fourth and fifth position. So not even in those top two positions. And one of the biggest concerns among a lot of German voters recently has been the fact that the far-right AfD has, since last summer now, been the second strongest party, is polled as the second strongest party in Germany. And so a lot of people will be watching closely to see how well the AfD do, of course, in June's elections. And it will be, I mean, already the current government clearly doesn't need any kind of wake-up call. The message is already there. And we've seen a shift in a way as well in some of the rhetoric of some of the governing leaders in recent months, particularly when it comes to the issue of migration. A lot of political leaders talking more about hard talk, taking a harder stance against migrants. And that really is being seen as a kind of populist move, really, to try and win back voters' confidence, and especially voters who have drifted towards the far right.
Mm-hmm. So migration then is top of the agenda for voters, would you say?
Absolutely. It does seem, at least according to a lot of recent polls, migration is still considered the most important issue among German voters. But of course, within that issue itself, you see a lot of the domestic issues that Germany is grappling with right now. And that's what's really consumed a lot of voters over the past couple of years, not only with the, you know, the energy crisis that we've seen across Europe, but also looking a little bit, zooming in a bit, you can see that the housing shortage of schooling places, shortage of child daycare as well. And that's all just highlighted even further as Germany's struggling to house and integrate these record numbers of people who are seeking asylum in Germany. And also there's a real back and forth about what is the best way forward. There's, you know, Germany's facing a huge labor shortage as well. One argument is that, you know, asylum seekers should be allowed to enter the labour market sooner. And at the same time, you're having debates about how the numbers can be capped. And so there's this real debate about how Germany can best, you know, move forward with this issue, mm-hmm. whilst not losing more voters to the far right.
And the AfD's growth has happened really since Olaf Scholz took over from Angela Merkel back in 2021, hasn't it? I wonder, is that a factor, though, or would it have happened regardless of who was chancellor?
My gut feeling is that it would have happened regardless of who was chancellor. The issues that the country is dealing with are largely issues that are that have been created in part way, or rather not resolved during 16 years of Angela Merkel's four different governments. There's a lot of exasperation when it comes to the lack of investment in the country over the years. And of course, that's not pushed everyone to vote for the far right, but it certainly exacerbated issues that were already there, the feeling of a lot of voters that they're being left behind and not listened to by the government. So I think,
Kate, thank you very much. Kate Brady there, who is a reporter with The Washington Post in Berlin. And in Paris, John Litchfield joins us. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Claire.
Now, this upcoming European election, it's the first nationwide test of voter opinion since 2022, where you are, Macron's second term as head of state. So what do you think are the issues at play as voters get ready to go to the polls in a couple of months' time?
Well, in a way, you put your finger on it, Claire. It's the only big national midterm election in France, and all the problems that midterm elections bring in any countries, it's the opposition parties, especially the far right, the Rassemblement National, Le Pen's party, are trying to make this a referendum on Macron and 7 years of Macronism, other opposition parties as well. And Macron's alliances, centrist alliances, tried to make it a referendum on Le Pen, who's 10 or 9 in the most recent poll, percentage points ahead in the opinion polls. And that would be an extraordinary victory for her, and it would leave Macron with 3 years as a lame duck, really, to be so repudiated by the electorate in this midterm election, and would put her in a strong position, potentially, for the presidential election next one in 2027. So those are the issues. They're kind of very domestic issues, really. Manoeuvring, political manoeuvring, there are obviously specific issues as well. Not many European issues, in fact.
Mm-hmm. But it's crucial, both for Macron and for Le Pen. So how is Macron playing this one?
Well, he has decided to try and make it an attack on her long-standing support for Putin before the Ukraine war, and somewhat ambivalent attitude to Putin since the Ukraine war began. So he's saying that this election is an existential election for Europe, for France, that you can't vote for a party like Le Pen's that has been in the past funded by the Kremlin and has been very close and is still in some ways supportive of Russian aims, is against the idea of arming Ukraine, for instance. So he's trying to turn things around in his favour by making this essentially an election in which he's going to say if not Marine Le Pen wins, because it's her number two, Jordan Bardella, who's technically running this campaign and is head of the list, but if the far right, if the Rassemblement National wins, it's a victory for Putin, as it would be in a sense. She is obviously trying to make it much more of an election about his record, about problems with French finances, with immigration, with crime, unemployment rising again after having been very successfully reduced by Macron in his early years.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways it's a ding-dong between those two, but there are of course other groups on the left and the centre-right who are also trying to somehow lever themselves into the battle, which is largely a battle between the government and Le Pen.
Well, John, we all saw those farmer protests in France, which were hugely disruptive. They happened in Germany, I know, as well. But how are the parties addressing the concerns of farmers? Because I would imagine that those European elections for the farming groups will be a focal point.
Yeah, that's one of the issues in the background in the elections, that the government managed to resolve that enormous series of strikes more or less a month ago now, I think, by promising all kinds of things to the farmers, which haven't all been delivered yet. In fact, there is, I think today or tomorrow, there's going to be a big government announcement of new approaches to farming, especially scaling back on environmental protections to allow more of the old productivist approach to farming, which French farmers want. So that is an issue in the background. Whether it's going to actually finally decide the results in the European elections, I'm not sure. Farmers themselves are actually now quite a small percentage of the French population. You know, the days when France had 2 million farmers are long gone. It's down below 400,000 now, I think. It obviously has an effect in rural areas as well, but it's not an enormous vote in these elections. And Farmers, strangely, yeah, they're pretty split, but they, in the last election, they voted quite strongly for Macron. So he will obviously be trying to persuade them to vote for him again with this package of measures, which is going to be announced in the next day or so. I wonder if that's going to decide which way the election will go. I think in some ways it's going to be whether Macron's people are able to persuade the electorate to turn out, first of all, because it's projected to be quite a low turnout. And if they turn out, that will perhaps bring out more of the sort of centrist voters who are a bit fed up with Macron at the moment and will therefore turn out to vote against Le Pen, as it were, rather than for Macron. And Le Pen is trying to do the rest, to do the opposite, to get people to turn out as a referendum against Macron. Well, not necessarily for her, but to put her in a very strong position, nevertheless.
Well, John, thank you very much for now, and I'm sure we'll be back with you again before those European elections in June. John Litchfield there is based in Paris. Coming up next, the widening gap between the haves and the have-nots. Richard Kern will tell us about the impact of it after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.